Wonder how the Electoral College will vote on December 19th. Every 4 years, we have to remind ourselves, what's the Electoral College again? Who are the 538 members? And are they just a rubber stamp of the popular vote? Or can they vote differently from states they represent? And this year, might they? Kyle Dell is a political science professor at Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina, and vice president of the board of Vote Smart, a nonprofit, nonpartisan elections research organization. He joins us by Skype. Kyle, welcome.
Thank you.
And as we've reported in other stories, it's come as something of a surprise to a lot of people this election year in particular that the founding fathers put speed bumps in the process. They were actually trying to protect against populism. So one of these, we understand, was the Electoral College. What is it?
So the Electoral College is this really interesting thing that's not a thing, right? So there's no reference to the term Electoral College in the Constitution. And barring something unusual happening, the Electoral College vote will be a very close mirror of the national popular vote.
Well, first of all, you mentioned this election season. Some people are thinking some things might happen. We'll get to that. But we understand that Alexander Hamilton explained that it would ensure that the office of president wouldn't fall to any lot of any man who is not in an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications, that it was so that there couldn't be this sort of popular uprising to have somebody go into office without a break on them, a speed break.
Right. Of course, that really crashes hard on the reality of political parties very quickly after George Washington. And it really is the case then that the Electoral College takes a back seat to political parties. I think the Electoral College system, though, still acts as somewhat of a brake on someone rising too quickly or someone without the kind of requisite testing, right? It really does push candidates, as an example, into places in this country and into different places across the country that they otherwise wouldn't go if we were just having a kind of one day count all the votes, you know, nationwide popular vote.
Because they have to win the electoral vote across the country as well. But explain further how it works. Who gets to be an elector? Who gets to cast this vote with the Electoral College?
So the electors are going to be selected by state-level parties. So in states like Massachusetts or my state of North Carolina, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party would select what are called a slate of electors. These are generally party loyalists, people whose trust is kind of beyond reproach, because when the votes are actually cast, that slate of electors really needs to cast the right vote in order to have that reflect the popular vote that happened in that state.
Well, I want to hold you up there, because isn't it true that, in fact, the founding fathers, when they created this body, wanted the vote to be in secret to give them the right to not vote with the popular vote?
Right. And it's interesting. You had up until a few years ago, the state of Minnesota, actually, the electors were casting their ballots in secret. The challenge there, of course, is that that could promote an elector who would be considered what we would call today a faithless elector, changing his or her vote to a different candidate. So it's a process that has changed over time, and the goals of the Electoral College, I think, have changed over time. But I think you still have this as kind of an intermediary body between the voters at large and then Inauguration Day.
That's Kyle Dell, political science professor at Guilford College. He's also on the board of Vote Smart. They're a nonpartisan elections research organization. We're taking a look at the Electoral College. You're listening to Here and Now. So, Kyle Dell, these days the Electoral College, it's a bit mechanical, predictable, but three presidents have been elected by the Electoral College after they lost the popular vote. Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876, Benjamin Harrison 1888, and George W. Bush, famously, in 2000.
Right. In these handful elections, as we saw just as recently as 2000, there can be this gap between the popular vote and the Electoral College vote. when the gap is in the favor of the winning candidate, it actually enhances what can appear to be a landslide election. Most of our recent presidential elections have been fairly close in the popular vote, but have been real landslides in the Electoral College. That may make new president-elects overconfident in the popularity of their agenda, but it does convey a certain level of democratic soundness, of a voice of the people, of a democratic mandate that we might not otherwise have if we have an election that's just a popular election and there's only maybe 2 or 3 percentage points different.
Now, we understand that some states did try to force the electors, you know, through state laws even, to reflect the popular vote. But that wasn't the founders' intent.
That's correct. So there was you know, this kind of worry that electors would be faithless electors. And there are state laws that in really about a little over half of the states that actually insist that the electors cast their ballots that way. Not the intent, not the plan A of the founders, but that's where we find ourselves today.
Yeah. Well, in fact, it's the basis of an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal recently written by the conservative writers David Rivkin and Andrew Grossman. And the title is "Let the Electoral College Do Its Duty." As the Ohio Supreme Court ruled in 1948, no state can dictate to the electors how to vote. And they write that many potential Republican electors, they're usually party standard bearers, and so you can kind of know who they might be, are already publicly flirting with the idea of casting the vote for someone other than Mr. Trump because they believe his erratic outbursts have disqualified him from being president. Are you getting that sense as well that this year the Electoral College might make more of a difference?
I think it would be, you know, it would be interesting to sit down and to actually kind of model out to see how many states really are in play, how many states still allow their electors that level of discretion. If the electors ended up exercising their discretion in that way, some would say bravely in that way, that would really be without precedent within anyone's lifetime that would be voting today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some might ask, well, if they can't do that, why else do they exist? And we explained there was supposed to be some sort of a speed bump between the popular election and the actual, you know, Congress authorizing the vote. But they're also there in case something happens between the election and Congress authorizing the vote.
That's right. Conceivably, the Electoral College could be a backup plan working with the political parties to say, there's something that was not that wasn't known that disqualifies a candidate, or there's something that happened to a candidate. We saw just this weekend renewed concerns about the health of Hillary Clinton. Well, we have two very old presidential candidates in comparison to the historic norm. You start to look to, okay, what's the backup system? What would the plan B be?
And it is the Electoral College. But we also have talked this election season about the election being rigged. We've heard that from Donald Trump and from supporters of Bernie Sanders. Are you hearing this more from students and this sense that, you know, the Electoral College almost adds to the rigging, adds to the thinking that it's not what we thought it was, a popular vote?
Yeah. And, you know, in some ways, as you mentioned earlier, Alexander Hamilton knew this over 200 years ago. He said about the Electoral College, if it's not perfect, at least it's excellent.
Yeah. That's Kyle Dell, political science professor at Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina, also vice president of the board of directors of Vote Smart, the nonprofit nonpartisan elections research organization. Professor Kyle, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
So, are you an elector thinking of voting against the popular vote, something Hamilton would have loved? Let us know at hereandnow.org.